Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. This hour, we're going to take a look at street art, at graffiti, at that world that some people think is just a blight on a community. Others say it is the art that enlivens our community. It is really a piece that came out of inner-city revolutionary roots, radical roots in many ways. And it's getting old, and some of the people doing it are getting old, too. So we're going to look at that across the country here this hour. A very interesting piece in the New York Times about that today. And remind you, you're listening to the Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA 88.9 FM. And you're also watching us now on Free Speech TV and can log on to steinershow.org and watch online there. So we want to get your thoughts from all over America tonight about street art and graffiti in your communities. Graffiti can be a negative sense. Street art is its positive sense. Talk about that and more. 410-319-8888 is number here. Right now, locally, we're going to turn you over to WEAA Traffic to check on the roads. And nationally, just listen to some good music and watch what's on the screen. And we'll come right back. Stay with us.
So they can pull clearance up.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. You're listening to us here on WEAA, watching some Free Speech TV. You can go on over to steinershow.org and watch us there. We have an in-studio guest and a guest in California today in one of our Urbanite Radio stories. For those of you around the country who don't know what that means, let me tell you what it means. Urbanite is a magazine that every community should have. Urbanite Magazine is a magazine that talks about our communities, what's going on in them at all levels. One of the articles, and every month we do a series of stories that come out of that magazine. And this month we're talking about an article about street art that Charles Cohen wrote called Cuba Comes Home, another one called The Oracle by Elizabeth Evitts Dickinson. And they were both made possible by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, looking at this idea and world of street art and what it means. One of the people featured in that article, both of them, two of the men, are with us here today. Joining us from California is Clarence Robb, known as Cuba, San Francisco graffiti artist who grew up here in Baltimore, and Adam Stab, who's been here before, one of our noted artists in this town and a street artist as well. And Adam and Cuba, welcome. Good to have you both with us. Cuba, can you hear us?
Fine.
Hi, how are you doing?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Pretty well. Right now I'm in an alley that we started a mural project in like the heart of the culture. It's called Lilac Alley. Adam checked it out when he came through last.
That was Adam's artistic comment on the microphone just there.
A thump off on you, Cuba.
So now, where is this in San Francisco? Where are you standing? Where are you now?
In the Mission District.
Uh-huh. And so, go ahead, I'm sorry.
24th and Mission.
So we're going to be showing some of the art as we talk about this during the course of this hour together. We really want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. Maybe you're listening to us from San Francisco. Maybe you're in Portland. Maybe you're in Seattle. Maybe you're in Boise. Maybe you're anywhere in America. What role does street art play in your community? What role does it play in this community? 410-319-8888. Got those little cell phones. You know, that means that you are no longer paying long-distance charges. Just pop it in and call us. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com, and we'll hear your thoughts on the airwaves, and we'll be looking at some of the art that we're talking about during the course of the hour as well. 410-319-8888. Let's talk. And there was an interesting piece that I was in the New York Times today, and that story was about graffiti art and the artists that made it a huge issue, a huge success in New York back in 1984. So these are guys now in their 20s and 30s, some of them were school teachers, and they created a collective called Slavery, where they're taking the old pieces that were done in the subway art of 84 and turning those into and changing them in some ways and giving them new names and giving them new themes and kind of recreating them. Some people thought they were kind of taken back to the days of Mayor Koch, but really it's kind of taking that art and putting it out now. And talk to us about, before we jump into that, and where that finds its place all over America. Cuba, if you could start us off, and Adam, jump right in here, is to look at the roots of graffiti art, the roots of street art. where it comes from.
You want me to speak?
Go ahead, man.
From what I know, the roots of street art come from really just growing up in an urban environment and seeing tags, whether no matter what city you're in, but New York was definitely, you know, the mecca. And if you go to Philadelphia, especially in the 70s, it was more crushed than New York.
What does that mean?
It means that it was just thoroughly scribbled upon, like houses, though, too. Like, relentlessly.
There was a little more terrification in Philadelphia than New York originally.
Yeah, it was kind of the first birthplace. But what's interesting, Mark, I didn't see this article this morning, but even just looking at the photo, and you guys had Marty on the show recently, right?
Yes.
Martha Cooper one of your guests
here? Right, she was. Martha Cooper was here with us.
Well, you know, just at a quick glimpse, this photo, this redone Joan of Arc piece, which was taken, as they say in the article, from the fold-out spread from Subway Art that was the original end car and whole car Hand of Doom, it says to me, without really even getting into the article, that graffiti art from that far back, especially stuff that, you know, Marty and Henry's book, when Subway Art came out, gave life to more writers than, and in one fell swoop, any other time in the movement. And for especially some of those works, some of those early trains, and some of those great photos to be, to have become as iconographed as they have, for somebody to be able to look back and recognize. I mean, writers worldwide can look at this piece and know, in sort of a kitschy throwback sense, what's being said here. And what's being said is that we've come that far. Graffiti art, in and of itself, inside of itself, has encapsulated its own mythology, and its own way of kind of having trademarked its existence. So, you know, it's strange to think that in such a short amount of time that this movement has done that. You know, I've been involved in it since the 80s. I started writing in 1983. And at the time, there was certainly no promise of accolades. And really, there was no desire for any.
Handcuffs, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You knew those were coming. You knew if you kept at it hard enough, you were going to spend some time inside. But at the time, you know, when I started, I was getting harassed by my high school teachers for involvement and pulled to the office and given a hard way to go. And now, you know, these many years later, I have 2 and 3 generations of friends who kind of paved their way with it, got like full ride scholarships to the Maryland Institute on showing portfolios of nothing but painted cars and walls that they'd done. And you know, that says a lot with regard to the march forward to popularity. And graffiti is one thing in a parallel of youth-oriented, youth-pushed lifestyle things that were again, you know, when I was a kid, they were hobbies. And if you'd have told me that Tony Hawk was going to be the millionaire, skateboarder, mega mogul businessman that he is now, I'd have never believed it. If you had told me at that time that, you know, Nissan and Disney and people like that were going to be paying me checks for doing graffiti, I wouldn't have bought it, because that was how hard they were pushing it down. But we, you know, it wasn't alone. They pushed a lot of things down, whether it was hip hop or dreadlocks or skateboards, or there was a lot of things in the early 80s, which again, this like this slavery collective that you mentioned is
right.
Is representing, and again, now like bringing back in a full wave of the culture kind of having a resurgence, a renaissance to a degree of its actual affect on popular culture, I think.
Cuba?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Just jump into what Adam was saying.
Can you rephrase the question again?
It wasn't a question. I was just I'm curious your thoughts on the historical power of street art, of what we call graffiti.
Oh, I
where it started, where it's come to.
Yeah, and that now it's better than ever to be doing what we're doing compared to back then. One, there's so many more new materials, and it's a worldwide thing. When me and Adam first started, only New Yorkers did this stuff. You know, and it kind of would, and we were like one of the first cities to branch out that it wasn't already in, as far as I know, at least like south of New York. I don't know about so much. I'm sure like the cities on the East Coast in Boston may have had an earlier influence than Baltimore.
Yeah, I mean, I think Philly, Baltimore, probably Boston, and L.A. as well, especially San Francisco, before
LA.
You got there, had barrio graffiti, had Latino graffiti, but
style.
not in the New York derivative, not in the style that you and I learned. But graffiti's resonance, I think, especially before style writing, because that's where we came in. You know, we even are children.
For our listeners who don't know, what do you mean by style writing?
Well, and this differentiates, and it's a shame that Guy is not here to, you know, to move on into the difference between even graffiti and what people now call street art. Because style writing is by definition what we do. That terminology was given to graffiti artists, to graffiti culture by Phase Two. And it basically summates what you're out to do with the kind of graffiti that we do. Because graffiti has always existed, and it will always exist in what I call the innocent form of, like, Johnny Love Sue, you know, like scrawled into a tree, or, you know, way before that, you know, the actual root base of the word itself, graffito, is a Latin residual word that, you know, comes from, I believe at the time, you know, what was a constant in political response in urban environments.
As far back as at least Rome.
Well, yeah.
They used
you know,
to
I mean, it's
pyramids.
It's always been, and it will, and it will always be there as a form of comment from the people. But now style writing, where we came in, where style writing grew out of a desire for voice, for a desire for identification in a place and at a time, especially again in the ghetto populace of Philadelphia, was where real style writing started. It wasn't even in New York City. It came out of Philadelphia. And at the time, you know, Black power and the love of urban identification and everything was what was going on in all levels of personal style. And style writing in that city came along with it. When you were from one neighborhood or another, you had a different way of dressing. You had a different way of wearing your hair. And style writing came along exactly with this.
Go ahead. Cuba, you were trying to say something a minute ago.
Yeah, a human need for expression is, I guess, the main motivation for doing it in the first place. And to me, no matter how good or bad, it's still expression. And the reason people do it is because there's a need for it. I mean, growing up in a neighborhood in Baltimore, you know, there was definitely a need for it.
What do you mean there was a need for it?
A need to express yourself on dilapidated property that was already fucked up. And we were
whoa, man, we can't.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It really is bad. You can't do that. We're on the air.
I apologize. Dilapidated property that no one cared about was starving for color. So that became our canvas. And you got to understand, we used to play in that dilapidated property before we started painting it. And no one ever cared about it. So, I mean, the issue of this property is just so foreign to me from the type of property I was exposed to. I mean, I'm talking rat-infested building. And as an urbanite magazine, I'm sure you do know what I'm talking about. That became, and it, also, our art looks the best in those dilapidated spots that no one cared about. And the whole point of it, it's not the art that's the problem. It's this dilapidated property that was just left to fester, you know. And once you leave property like that, it rats come in and they take over.
Well, the property line and the ownership issue becomes an interesting side of I think where we are at, or especially where street art culture, where graffiti and style writing has come to, because a part of what I have experienced in growing up with it is that at times it will and it can help to sort of redefine and blur the lines of how we look at public and personal property. And I think that in all good hopes that the way it continues to grow, or that in some of the communities where it has been accepted as a little bit more organic and irremovable part of the community, and where it has started to work its way into a less combative position with other urban residents,
is
city living. It will always be here, and in order to rethink what's wrong, what's right, what's beautiful, what's not, and to even release of the prospect that, well, even something that is threatening or kind of poses a little bit of misunderstanding on one level culturally has a lot to teach if you can turn the open eye or mind to it, that maybe your own child or somebody, you know, a couple generations younger than yourself isn't as threatened by it, but maybe is actually turned on to it and has someplace creative or someplace positive to go with it. And I have seen, you know, graffiti be the first and only light in the lives of especially urban residents who, for all intents and purposes, would have never had any art form or any endeavor that meant, for whatever reason, that they started, finished, and completed a project, because these are the essential, you know, building blocks that it takes to succeed, you know.
But when you guys started, when you started doing this in Baltimore when you were younger, in the early 80s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was a time. I'm sorry, Cuba, go ahead.
I was 15, to be exact.
You were 15?
Yeah.
And what year was that?
79.
79, okay. So, that's when I'm getting old. You could have been my student. But be the, you've both been my students. But so back in 59, I remember when this began. And I remember seeing this stuff pop up around Baltimore. And I know it was New York phenomenon. But it popped up here. It popped up almost organically in East L.A. It popped up in the streets of San Francisco. It popped up many places.
Mm-hmm.
And it popped up in places that were poor. It popped up in places that were mostly African-American, Latino, where hip-hop culture was just beginning to grow. And as you were talking about earlier, Adam, mm-hmm. and it's you can't separate, it seems to me, the power and growth of street art from the hip-hop culture, from the folks that were left behind in the society and in the inner city communities.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's where it all
and
exploded
all levels.
From.
I mean, and especially in
from
New
the bottom
York,
up.
It was urban. It was the urban format. I mean, there was as many young white kids as responsible for not just graffiti but hip hop. You know, people don't really realize that in New York City, it may not have been so much the case in urban areas in L.A., where it was mainly Latin when graffiti started. Same thing in Philadelphia. I think there were maybe less, younger white writers, especially in the early 70s. But it has always crossed cultural lines, but not economic lines. It's always been an economically available thing and always been a very urban thing. And again, it had parallels at the same time as this was going on, and it was a part, you know, people still call it a considerate percentage of what you have to have if you're really representing hip-hop in all of its elements with regard to DJing and MCing and breakdancing. But at the same time, especially in urban areas like New York, punk rock played as important a part in that growth. And if you look at how popular its whole accolade of style is now, it's very similar.
Well, some of the music go ahead, Cuba.
I just wanted to say real quick, we just had an event here with Emory Douglas, the Minister of Culture for Culture for the Black Panther Party.
Yes, he was on the show just about a month ago.
Yeah, well, having met Emory, and I did the flyer for the event, I told him the reason that we started Hippity Hoppin' is because our role models were persecuted, namely him and his organization, and Mumia Abu-Jamal. And so when we came up, we were left to our own devices. And one of the things we did was fast talking, wall scrawling, and head spinning. You know, we didn't have role models, so we were left to do. I mean, the best way of rebellion was through a marker. You know what I mean? In terms of just showing how we're discomfort with our surroundings. Graffiti did that for me, especially after seeing the word revolt. And also, taking the first graffiti I ever saw in B-Town was Black October, Death to the Pusher, Dope Must Go. The same walls I hit when I came up, that graph was already there, fading.
In Baltimore.
You know what I mean? Yeah, in Baltimore. Remember Black October?
I do. It was Black October,
yeah,
was almost
the first graffiti I ever saw with Moe.
Right.
So that was my early influence. It just wasn't until Revolt rolled through that, you know, that I was like, this is it for me.
But let me ask you two questions about you just a second. Black October. I remember we had a conversation about Black October here with Emory Douglas about a month and a half ago, with other old Panthers were on the show when he came through town to show his artwork. And
so we
were talking about Black October. He said most people said it was mostly a myth, but the art was real.
Yeah.
In other words, people weren't often pushers, killing pushers, but the sensibility, what that meant, was there, and it was on the wall to send a message about the future community through art.
As a 6-year-old kid on Madison and Whitelock was one of those tags where my great grandma lived, and I wondered then if it was just when I was 6 years old, wonder if there was really some guys going around killing pushers, or if that were just a myth. So it's funny you mention that, because my earliest memories of seeing that was wondering, was there's a group of guys going around murdering dope pushers, calling themselves Black October.
And there was supposed to be out of the Panther world, but so that was also very real, though, in that in some ways the precursor, the beginning of your art, of your early graffiti work in the early 80s around the country, came out of the revolutionary art of the 60s.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean,
that was painted on walls.
You know, I mean, most of the people who became graffiti writers, breakdancers, participants in the hip-hop movement in New York were all gang members. As the gangs stopped
the art
turfing and fighting over, you know, different small incomes and things in the neighborhood, it became a different way to congregate and to express and to actually, you know, again, like continue a certain amount of competition.
And every generation has its own means of expression.
I'd like to get our listeners in here. I know this is I'd like to hear from some of you, wherever you are listening to us from now or watching us from now. Maybe you were a graffiti artist in your early years. Maybe you still are painting walls. Maybe you look at this stuff and you think it is trash and it is blighting our communities, and what your thoughts are about that. Because in many ways, it's still against the law. You can't just go around painting buildings. People do it in the dead of night because you don't exactly have a license to go paint an abandoned building unless you're being paid to paint a mural by the government, which happens as well, though that money has ended in Baltimore and is ending around the country in many of the communities. Join us here at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Whether you're watching us on Free Speech TV, streaming live at steinershow.org, or listening to us here on WEAA 88.9 FM, your voice of the community here in Baltimore. Wherever you're hearing us from or watching us, we want you to join us. What are your thoughts about this kind of art? Maybe you're a student in an art college at MICA or anywhere around the country, and you began your world of art by painting walls and what those mean to us. So tell us what you think at 410-319-8888. I see a bunch of folks calling in now. Looking forward to your thoughts. We're talking with Adam Stab here in the studio. Adam Stab has been on the show before. He's a Baltimore graffiti artist and an amazing a man and a father. So people are growing up and having babies and still painting and still hitting the walls.
Looking forward to passing along to her.
There you go. Oh, there you go.
She's got the namesake, so we'll see how it comes down.
And Cuba joins us from San Francisco, a graffiti artist who cut his teeth here in Baltimore as a young man. And went to New York and is now in San Francisco. And his given name is Clarence Robb, but he's known as Cuba. And all these guys grew up together in Baltimore, painting the walls of our abandoned buildings. 410-319-8888. Let's go to our first caller, Doug in Virginia Beach. You're on the air. Hi, Doug. You're on the air. Can we pull him up?
DST, checking in.
This is a graffiti movement in Baltimore. I actually know Adam and support basically everything that's been going on over the years and a part of the new generation that's happening right now by way of the old. So it's definitely one thing to keep the history alive of what's going on with this, and given an insight with this, I really support what they had to say.
Tell me why, man. Tell me about why you support why you support it.
Well, a lot of the, you know, things that happen between generation gaps is, like Cuba touched on, is every generation has their own voice. So at the end of the day, it's still a graffiti, the same voice, but with views and things that transcend from that.
And I, for you and men and women around you, what does it say to you? What is it, when you see that art on the wall, when you see it on the side of a bus, when you see it in an abandoned building, what is it saying to you?
It could say something different, you know. Even different times you see it, it could say something different to you. So it really is what that art is that you see. You know, it depends on.
Well, the cross-cultural communication there is really deep. Like I'll throw it into perspective for you. You know, I grew up underneath Clarence, that is to say that he was doing graffiti in Baltimore a few years before I was. I'm a little younger than him, and I came on the scene in his shadow. One of the things that transcends graffiti, and it's a really, really integral, important part of what we do as style writers, is that we represent from where we are. Dougie is another East Side original writer from the side of town that I moved into when I came here to Baltimore. And one of the things that graffiti communicates to us most especially, like when you're from the east side of town, is that you're from that side of town.
Community.
Right. And I can look at somebody's graffiti and I can tell they're from the Northwest. I can tell they're from San Francisco. I can tell they're from Philadelphia.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of the quick, easy communications that we as participants get from one another's artwork.
So let me ask you all this question. In Cuba, it responds to this, let's start with you. And how can you tell that? I mean, how can you tell? Let me put it out there. I enjoy looking. I go around the streets and see this stuff, and I'm not. I haven't painted on a wall, but not since 1968. When I did do it, it wasn't that good. So, so
it might have been for a good reason. I'm sure, Mark.
Yeah, but my artwork is not that good. I mean, I love doing it, but nobody wants to look at my stuff. But so, but when I see it, I always amaze myself. I'll ask this question later. How people actually get it on walls that you don't know how folks can dangle from buildings to do it. That's one question I think many people have when they drive
past
and see it.
I'm sorry.
But the question that I have, though, is how do you know when it is from another community? How do you know a guy is from Northwest Baltimore? How do you know a guy is from Seattle, Washington, or New York just by looking at the work they do?
Well, that's
that's a tough one. You can't always.
Uh-huh.
But unless their style sticks out to a certain way, it'll speak for itself.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
one thing about this work is that it speaks for itself. So if you get walls to where people want to decide whether it's art or not, you do the best work you can and then let the work speak for itself.
Now, we have to take a short break. We have to take a break and come right back. When we do, we'll be joined here in studio by Adam Stab, and Cuba joins us from San Francisco. You all join us from wherever you're calling from at 410-319-8888. King Mask One is on line two coming up next. And John has a comment about the artist is on the next line, line three. We're coming to his call next, 410-319-8888, to join us here. And we'll be right back, so stay with us. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back as we explore the world of graffiti, street art. It's growing up into adulthood. The men and women who started this stuff at 15 or 16 and now people in their 30s and 40s, some of them, and it's still growing, and it's still a people's art, and we're exploring it this hour. This is one of your Urbanite radio stories, and that was made possible by the Annie Casey Foundation. And these two articles we're talking about are Cuba Comes Home by Charles Cohen, and Cuba is one of our guests, and The Oracle by Elizabeth Evitz Dickinson. And our other guest, of course, is Adam Stab, who's still living in Baltimore and still a graffiti artist. And remind you as we get back to this conversation that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible in part by the University of Maryland Heart Center, where expert cardiologists, cardiac surgeons, nurses, and support staff have built a nationally recognized program focused on prevention, treatment, and rehabilitation. For a virtual tour of the Heart Center, you can go to www.umm.edu/heart. Or look at their banner right here on the at steinershow.org. and click on their website. And also support for WEAA is provided by the Cape May Jazz Festival, presenting the Yellow Jackets, Javon Jackson, Les McCann, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, November 12th through the 14th at the historic Victorian City by the Sea, Cape May, New Jersey. More information online at capemayjazz.com or 877-7-CMJAZZ. And you're listening to the Mark Steiner Show here on 88.9 FM, WEAA, where our home base we're broadcasting from across the nation on Free Speech TV. You can also watch us here at steinershow.org as we stream the show live. Call us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We have a lot of folks calling in from all over. But, Adam, you had a quick thought you were going to jump into as we were going. Do you remember?
I think, importantly, one of the things that differentiates being able to identify where a style writer is from is how practitioned that writer is in representing the certain provincial nature of the style that he or she came up around. In Baltimore, and since the early 80s, we have been known in the graffiti world, in the style writing world, to have a certain Baltimore hand. Philadelphia has three or four different surviving hand styles, and as just a, you know, a remnant issue, as I mentioned before, you know, when style writing was born in Philadelphia and at its height of how the culture was being dealt with and respected in Philadelphia before it really escaped to New York or to any other city, you know, if you were a writer in that city and you were really claiming to be down and you were really claiming to be doing work, you'd be out and about and you'd be in the community, you'd run into another writer, and it was a strict testing of what your actual writing skills were. You'd have to, like, represent your Southeast and have your wickets in line, and people would put each other to the test. And so a lot of that kind of actual, oh, well, you say you do X, Y, and Z, well, prove it, has kind of dropped out of the culture. But one of the things that's still definitely there is that, like, say, if you're a San Diego-born writer, there's going to be a certain nature to who you watched, who you grew up under, that you're going to carry on. And to writers who have really been paying attention to this culture who are from Minnesota
local
or from Boston, they're going to recognize that as a differentiation of style from where they're from.
What were you saying, Cuba?
Local influences.
Wherever
your locality is.
So has yours changed since you moved about the country?
No. I'll answer that for you, Clarence. No. Everybody can still tell you grew up under revolt.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
And that's what I mean. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, Clarence, you can see Danny's influence in your hand to this day. And people
yeah.
realize that you grew up under a New York writer.
Proud of it.
Amen.
Let's go back to the phones at 410-319-80.
Hey, my phone's going to go dead soon. I just thought I'd let you know.
Can you plug it into a telephone pole?
No,
like we used to. Come on.
I mean, I'll go tell
this
guy. I just wanted to give you the heads up.
Okay, well, if you fade out, we know what happened. If you figure out how to plug it in the next half an hour, wherever you are, plug it in.
Okay.
Or get your boy's phone, Clarence. Get your boy's phone and switch up the number.
Can you call me back on a different number?
We can do that. We can call you back on a different number. We have to...
Okay, 410?
Don't do that. What we'll do is the producer across the glass is about to pick up the phone and take the number to call you back, okay? So hold tight. He's going to pick up and get it from you right now.
Hey, Randolph, can the state call you? WEAA from Baltimore. Stabs on there now. And we're talking live.
This is live radio, see?
He's in an alley in the Mission, yeah?
Okay, you're closer, though. Hello?
Okay, go ahead. Could you pick up the phone so you can get that, y'all, please? Good. They're taking it now. King Mask 1, you're on the air.
PA checking in.
King Mass 1, you're on the air.
How you doing, Adam?
I'm in there.
Hey, you know, the whole thing about it is everybody ever even picked up a pen or a can of paint, you know, it was always under the cloud of Danny. Revolt, that is, you know. Clarence,
in this town, yeah.
Are you still on the air? How you doing, Clarence? I haven't seen you in a long time, man, you know. You know, you probably can't remember who I am, but nevertheless, if you probably saw my face, you would have remembered me. You know, Savarisi and such. But, Adam, you have a lot of good things to say about it and stuff like that. But, you know, there's a lot of graffiti writers out there that really don't want to be on the radio and everything. And, you know, but besides myself. But, you know, I mean, I don't know what else to really say to you. It's just the fact that, you know, it's like, you know, graffiti is like happening. It's up in Baltimore, and you're one of the one big guys to actually say that. You know, like, it seems like it just skips right over Baltimore in a recognizable portion. It's like, you know, I go from Philadelphia straight to D.C., and, like, Baltimore's not even in the, you know, in the race. What do you have to say about that?
Well, it did for a while, but, you know, we're changing that.
Oh, we're changing that. Well, we'll see you on Saturday, won't we?
What's Saturday?
You know where Saturday's at. You're coming with me. But nevertheless, Clarence, I'd really like to say hi to you. I haven't seen you in so long, you know, but nevertheless, Baltimore graffiti is like, you know, it's up and coming, and it said something. You know, I'm a super old graffiti writer, just like Adam and such. You know, Clarence has been around like, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years. Is that about right? And you know, the timeline, that'd be about right, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But I started writing in '85. Adam started writing in probably maybe '84, '85. Right around it's probably like only one or two graffiti writers are writing longer than I, and Adam is one of them. But, you know, I mean, I don't know what to say about the whole graffiti situation. It's the fact that, you know, it's still alive and kicking. Old heads like me pushing me out. I'm like 10 seconds away from 40, and I'm, you know, and Adam's like, I ain't going to say how old he is. I don't know exactly how old he is, but nevertheless. But, you know, we're still kicking it out there. Old heads are still out there. You know, King Zekoys, God, you know, he's still with us, you know.
Yeah, well.
West Side Riders, East Side Riders, you know, it takes a lot. It takes a lot for people to come together.
So,
and, you know, say again.
So if you were to say for people who, let's say, live in the city you're in now, when Cuba gets back, talk about San Francisco, where should people go to look at some of the best stuff in town?
Best stuff in town now. You can go down loads of fun and stuff like that and see a little bit of stuff and so on. But, you know, a lot of the stuff is still in the streets. You know, it really is. You have to stare and find it. It's in the nooks and crannies here and there. You know, and they hide it. A lot of it's on freight trains and such. It's like, you know, I've painted freight trains. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get up on a train and you start painting on it. And next thing you know, you hear the air brakes go right on down the line, and then, you know, the train's gone and stuff like that. I tried all that and everything, but, you know.
Okay. Well, we got to go to the next caller here, but, man, I'm glad you called in. And it's a question here, man. This is what King Mass was saying and Adam. Is Cuba back yet? Do we have him back yet? We're calling him back now.
I thought I was speaking with Clarence.
No, he
can hear you, but he's not online yet.
Hi, Clarence. I still got you on all my schedules. They go back to 1988. I just got one back from Adam a couple months ago.
Right.
Right or wrong, Adam?
It's right.
K-Mass-1, thanks for being with us. We're gonna go to the next caller. I said, thanks for being with us. We've got to go to the next caller. But so there's two questions here with this. There's several before we go to our next caller, who's John. There are a lot of people who drive past who never thought about throwing stuff off on a wall, ever, or a subway car, or a freight car, as King Mask One was talking about, that he likes to specialize in. But so how does he? I think folks are going to go, how do they do that? How do you get on the side of a bridge that is dangling over a highway and throw something up? How do you do that?
You know, I mean, basically the MO of the street artist, of not just the style writer, but I'm sure, you know, again, if Guy was here to represent, he would tell you the same, that, like, once you've chosen a spot for something, whatever it takes to get it done is kind of a part of the skills that are required to succeed or, you know, grow a name in this art form. Of course, everybody wants to go home to their bed at night. You know, I mean, that's sort of the end all be all, is that, you know, you don't want to not end the mission. But, you know, every one out of five or so ends in a night in a sewer hole or chased by the police or just, you know, as Scotty was saying, you know, the air brakes turning on and your train rolls out before you finish your artwork. But the idea is that you get it done at whatever cost. Lots of people like to have their adrenaline shoot through the roof, and that's a large part of it. Hanging off of a 2 inches of steel by your fingernails is a thrill.
Let's go back to the phones of 410-319-8888. We're talking about street art, graffiti, the world that's grown over the last 20-odd years in this art form. Some people are now making huge amounts of money at it. Many people have gone out, off to art school with what they've done. Others have gone to jail. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We'll go to John and then Maurice. John, you're on the air.
Hey, hello? Hello, what? You there?
Yep, you're on
hey,
the air.
How's it going? Hey, how's it going? Hey, Adam, man. It's John ASK, man. Just
ask one.
In. How's it going? I just want to, you know, just give a comment. I'm a little older. I got into graffiti because I used to always go to Philadelphia as a young person, and I would always drive underneath 83 Bridge. And it was funny how you brought up the how do people get things done or how do they get up on the wall.
Right.
Because that's actually how I got into graffiti, just trying to figure out how the heck did it do it. How did they do it? But really, I mean, I had not too many people show me, but luckily, you know, I'm from Northwest Baltimore. And like Adam was saying, you can tell different styles come from different parts of the city. And, you know, I luckily I went to Northwestern and I met up with a couple dudes and somehow I ended downtown. And that's how I met a couple people who were writing. You know, Scotty Mask just was there. I met him also. But also, I've always been just a fan, a huge fan of graffiti. And like I said, I'm old, and I'm going to be a fan of graffiti until I die. You know, I still go to the shows. I try to collect as much art as possible. I love the markers and everything like that. So it's not something that, you know, you get into it and you get out. I think once you're in, you're in for life.
It's in the blood.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. It's either you love it or you hate it. And once you start, it's hard to quit. I mean, I see guys. I think I got back into it a couple of years ago because I saw somebody, and I've been into it ever since, just collecting and you know, just checking all the artwork out.
But, well, you know, John, tell me if I'm wrong. It's a lot like the rest of the culture that we grew up in and around in our days. Oh. You know, I mean, you quit listening to hip hop too, and you don't DJ any records anymore, right?
No, so. I still do DJ records. Okay. They told me a couple years ago. I had my computer, so you know, I brought back the vinyl. Brought back the vinyl, so, you know, I'm still going to do it to vinyl. But like you said, it is the culture, what we grew up with. Yeah. It wasn't just a hip-hop. But hip-hop would encompass everything. You go to the punk rock clubs, whether you're hanging at the Loft or you're hanging at Signal. It was almost all hip-hop to me. You know, with the skateboarding, BMX, you know, it all rolls together.
Yeah, it's
all
parallel lines, man.
Yeah, and I think in the 80s, the early 80s and the late 80s, that just made it really great for what it is now. I mean, everything, that's how you have the hipsters now. I think what we made in the 80s bred hipster culture. And also, because you guys are from Baltimore, you're so passionate about your art. I mean, everybody who's big, I really look around, they're from Baltimore, they're just huge because they're so passionate. I mean, you got people like you have people like Jeff, even throughout the art world. I mean, these guys are huge. I mean, look at Shanique right now, you know, she's great.
Yeah,
so
man.
You guys, you know, are passionate about what you do. And that's the great part about Baltimore graffiti is that these guys are serious. They really take it serious. It's not just some guy going up to the wall and say, hey, I'm going to scrawl my name. I think it really is a lifestyle. And that's just my small little comment.
John, I appreciate your comment. I appreciate being part of the show. Let's go back to the phones here. Cuba's back with us, too. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Your thoughts on graffiti art, on street art. And Maurice, you're on the air.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Me, myself, graffiti art, to me it looked like garbage. You know, you don't understand nothing what they writing, but it's just a bunch of colors mixed together, and it's really not saying anything. Now, I ride the subway going towards Orange Mills, and I think it's just below Cold Spring Station. It's some graffiti up there, and it doesn't look good. It's not saying anything, but just a bunch of paint, lines here, lines there. It's not saying nothing. Kind of like body art. You know, a lot of people get a bunch of tattoos put on them. You can't even figure out what's on their body. It don't look good, gentlemen. You know, and I'm glad, you know, the police was cracking down on that stuff. You know, and it don't look good, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you, Maurice. Well, let's just talk about this a minute. I mean, what Maurice is saying, and Cuba, you're back on the line, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, man.
Okay, cool.
So what Maurice was just saying, I think there are a lot of people who look at a lot of the graffiti art. Some, you know, looks good, but people are saying there's a lot of stuff that is just trash, and it messes up a city, that it makes a city look trashy. That a lot of guys just throw their names up there, want to get to be known, so they throw their name out.
It's really eye of the beholder, as far as that goes, like anything. It's not like you're not already bombarded by ugly advertisements.
Amen.
Same. So this is just our brand of advertising.
Yeah. I mean, it's, again, it strikes up that whole property issue over, like, you know, when I got to leave my house, what is it, Clear Channel, it puts more 10-foot-wide, you know, advertisements for stuff I don't want to buy and I don't want to know about down my throat than, you know, I can stand to think about. But nobody stops to question that type of space ownership or that type of, like, mental accosting, the occasionality of having to look at graffiti, which, you know, again, I'm sure you're not on the subway for that long on the way to work, and then you're staring into your computer screen or whatever. But the amount of, again, the amount of release that is required to not get concerned with the state of, say, back of a roadside mall wall that faces a set of train tracks is more the point. We live in sort of an existence as style writers where, to some degree, where there's no harm, there's really not a foul. I don't know too many artists that are out to, like, abuse the individual or the private owner with what they do with their graffiti. It occasionally happens. Graffiti is connected to rambunctious and youth culture the same as is underage drinking and throwing rocks and bottle rockets on Halloween. And occasionally there's a little broken glass that shouldn't be broken. But for the most part, the people who practice style writing are not, you know, they're not out to
destroy or
victimize anybody personally.
What did you say, Cuba? Cuba?
Yeah.
What did you just say?
I had to add to that. Is that cool?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But we're not out to destroy anything. It's just like our way of creating.
Yeah. I mean, but certainly it's the point Cuba made. It's an eye of the beholder thing. I'll admit that graffiti in its rawest form, in the writing form, in the what we call tags, and all of the different, like, styles and in irreadable calligraphies that come along with that is definitely a little, it can be threatening. It can be scary to the unlearned eye. You know,
Let me, on the way back to Cuba, let's go back to the phones. Kevin, you're on the air. Hi, Kevin, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, you always got a good topic, man.
Thank you.
Hi to your guest. I got to be honest with you. I'm really, not feeling this whole graffiti thing, man. I know back in the day in D.C. there was this cat named Cool Disco Dan, and he yes. tagged every wall in D.C., man. You know, he's
that's
like
the man.
Cool. Yeah, but I just, man, when I'm on the MARC train and stuff, man, and I'm taking the subway, I guess because I'm older, I guess, I don't know what, man. It just, to me, it brings on, it just adds to the urban blight to me, man. But I was hoping that it was a place where, you know, cats could go and express themselves like normal artists do. Like, they have museums, they have, you know, shows and things like that, man. But to just tag a building or a mall wall or something like that, man, and where people would invest money into property and stuff, man, it's just, to me, I don't know, man. It's just, I'm just not feeling it, man. I mean, I appreciate what you guys do and everything, and I know that's, you know, it's got to be a place where y'all could go, man, and just go have at it. You know what I'm saying? But to have it on.
Luckily, these days, you're right. There are a couple. There's people who are into it enough that there's a lot more donated space than there used to be.
So, let's brother, finish what you're saying. Finish what you're saying, man.
Yeah, I just, you know, like I say, I just think, man, you know, Baltimore, man, I love Baltimore, but what I see, you know, aesthetically, man, it's just, it seems like it's adding to the negative, you know, part of it. And I like to, you know, especially when people invest money, you know what I mean? To have somebody come and just, you know, just paint on that wall, man. It's just, I just don't feel that, man.
Cuba, go ahead.
I bet if you tried doing it, you would like it. Just choose property that's already been abandoned.
But what he's saying is that I think a feeling a lot of people have. You can admire the art. You can admire it politically. You can admire it artistically. You can understand where it comes from and what it's saying to the community, but then you can look at it also as a blight, as something that is destroying the side of a building someone else has created, that has taken a piece of property, let's say a subway car or a bus or a freight train that and just taking it and deciding to put your tag, your name, your interpretation of the world on it, that other folks can look at and go, oh, why are you defacing that place?
It's the way I look at Marlboro ads. And that's the way I look at all the alcohol ads that are in our community, especially around young children. You know, it's hardly any different. To a certain degree, I mean, yeah, you're right. It's a bum rap when you invest money, time, and hard effort into the ownership of property that then someone destroys. But living in the urban environment, you nevertheless give up a lot. You know, I can't tell you how accosted I feel most of the time by the city and its regulations. The very city I live in accosts me constantly with all kinds of things that I feel like are a little over the edge and a little invasive to my ideas of what I would like to consider my personal space or property lines.
Cuba? Cuba, you there?
What's that? Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, did you want to respond to that too?
Respond to what exactly?
To what we were just talking about, how some people...
I know what I wanted to say. If a discarded property that's already been left to rot is ideal for graffiti, whether people like to see it or not.
I think largely that becomes a point. We really do. I mean, Clarence has said a few times over that he has such a large preference for the demolished side,
right,
the kind of degraded areas of the urban area that, you know, that probably already kind of like look like blight to people. Of course, that's not everybody's MO, and a lot of new property gets written on, and that becomes what people talk about with regard to have an issue with.
Well, let me finish what you were saying. Leave us with a thought.
Hello?
Cuba?
Yeah.
The communication not so hip tonight, but leave us with a thought here on what you were just saying for about another minute.
Can you repeat that? I'm sorry.
I said it. That's all right, man. The communication scene is doesn't need to be working with a cell phone you're on. Whoever it is, it's not coming through too strong. But this is an area that really has community divided. Even people who might be politically, socially attuned to many of the same things you are, you all are. A lot of the guys who are doing.
To respond to that, you do the best work you can, and that will speak for itself, even for the people who think they don't like it. If the work comes correct, then you can shut them up.
Well, one of the interesting things, too, that we really haven't touched on here yet, and especially, again, I think it's unfortunate that Guy wasn't here, is that, you know, a lot of, and his whole article references what's going on with now, like, the non-style writing-oriented street art movement, which is even more... just totally red hot, prolific in the art schools these days. Any urban metropole across the globe nightly has like dozens and dozens of kids doing like sticker art and wheat pasting and stenciling and things that have become much more popular than style writing in and of itself. And, you know, Gaia being one of the few people we have in this town that's actually doing really worthwhile stuff. I think not only as an environmental artist, but as a studio artist, has a great eye, and what he's doing in the community communicates to people in a totally different way than does style writing.
Gentlemen, this has been great. I really have enjoyed this a lot. I think that it's an art form that people don't get a chance to hear very much on our media, and talk about the men and women who do this, and we want to come back to this, and maybe we have a chance to get out in the street and do some street stuff with you all and just see what's going on. And I can't do much running from the man anymore because my knees don't do that like they used to, but we'll see how it goes.
We don't run from the man that much anymore ourselves.
Cuba, thanks a lot, man. Thanks for joining us from San Francisco.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, big up, Mob Town.
And Adam Stab, good to have you with us, brother. Thank you so much for coming in studio. And once again,
my pleasure.
This has been one of our Urbanite stories from Urbanite Magazine's articles, Cuba Comes Home. And the Oracle, you can check them both out and connect them from our site, steinershow.org, and see more about that. And we always are doing our Urbanite radio stories, which reminds me, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines, where you can get your weekly fix of arts and culture, food and drink, home and design, style and shopping, and green and sustainable topics. Up-to-date information can be delivered to your inbox Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. Our intern today is Will Mason. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and check out things about our guests, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And for Free Speech TV, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.